Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, we open our show with the latest on the hepatitis outbreak, which began here in San Diego and has now been declared a statewide emergency by Governor Jerry Brown. We'll also have news about some important legislation signed into law by the governor, including new pool safety measures aimed at preventing child drowning, which is the leading cause of death for young children in California, and a bill to provide tuition-free community college for first-year students statewide. Hear about a relief fire caravan leaving from El Cajon on Friday to bring supplies to survivors of those devastating wildfires in Northern California. Learn what items are needed and how you can help out on today's show. San Diego State University researchers have received a major grant for autism research, and we'll have details. This is Teen Driving Safety Week, and the El Cajon Police Department has some tips for parents on how to help keep your teenage drivers safe behind the wheel. From Public News Service, hear how President Donald Trump's executive order canceling Affordable Care Act subsidies could impact your health and the health insurance market. On Crime Beat, hear about some terrifying moments for library patrons in Alpine over the weekend, where a man armed with realistic-looking toy guns threatened people before he was arrested. On People Power, we have some good news about a grant from the Grossmont Healthcare District to help the Challenge Center in La Mesa, a facility that helps make a positive difference in the lives of people with brain and spinal cord damage. There's a frightening new drug, 5,000 times more potent than heroin, and it's turning up in counterfeit pain pills in San Diego and across the nation. Learn more on today's show. Our newsmaker interview today is Chida Warren Darby, the editor of San Diego Voice and Viewpoint newspaper. Now, last week we spoke with her on domestic violence, and she's back today to talk about issues impacting African Americans in our region, including selection of a new San Diego police chief and district attorney. East County had two brush fires over the weekend that set nerves on edge, and one of them was caused by illegal shooting. Hear about a criminal probe being launched on today's show. On Ready, Set, Grow, we'll have some planting tips for you on great trees for fall foliage, plus some home safety tips. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Gene Carpenter with a health report. Governor Jerry Brown has issued a statewide emergency proclamation to allow California to increase its supply of hepatitis A vaccine in order to control the growing outbreak. A press release issued by the governor's office states, immunizations from the federal vaccine program have been distributed to at-risk populations in affected areas, but additional supplies are needed. But according to Brown's proclamation, the federally funded supply of vaccines is inadequate to meet the state's current needs. The emergency proclamation gives the California Department of Public Health authority to immediately purchase vaccines directly from the manufacturers and distribute them to impacted communities. Of the state's 576 hepatitis A cases in the current outbreak, San Diego accounts for 490 of them, followed by Santa Cruz with 71 cases, 8 cases in Los Angeles, and 7 elsewhere in the state. The outbreak has resulted in 386 hospitalizations statewide and 18 deaths. All of the deaths were in San Diego County, according to the California Department of Public Health's website. The transmission has been person to person, primarily among homeless persons and illicit drug users, and has led local governments to power wash streets, implement vaccination programs among those at risk and people who interact with them, such as healthcare and social workers. And in San Diego, the city has set up a temporary homeless camp in an effort to get homeless people off the streets. Governor Brown's order instructs the state's Department of Public Health to hold and control all vaccines intended for wholesale distribution and to prioritize vaccination of at-risk individuals in at-risk areas, which would put San Diego at the top of the list. It also waives a ban on emergency medical technician paramedics administering the vaccines and instructs the state's Department of Health to obtain vaccines through all means necessary.
This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. California has a shortage of college-educated workers. A key obstacle to a college education is cost, so Governor Jerry Brown has signed into law Assembly Bill 19, which will provide community college students 1 year of tuition-free education. The bill waives all tuition fees for full-time students in their first year, although students would still need to cover costs of books or other expenses. That's $46 per credit for tuition, so a student with a minimum of 12 units a semester would have $552 in tuition paid for by taxpayers. A student taking 18 units would get $828 in tuition fee waivers. California is not the first to drop tuitions. Oregon, Tennessee, and Rhode Island have all begun offering tuition-free community college classes to help address the college affordability crisis.
Governor Jerry Brown has signed into law Senate Bill 442, which aims to help make residential swimming pools safer. It requires new safety features for new pools and pools undergoing major repairs or remodeling, as well as disclosure of pool safety problems when a home is sold. Drowning is currently the leading cause of death for children ages 1 to 4 in California. It's a silent killer, and it only takes a couple of minutes for a child to drown. Hospital records in California show for every fatal pool drowning, there are 5 other near drownings resulting in hospitalization. The main cause of hospitalization is brain injury due to lack of oxygen to the brain. From 2010 to 2014, over 160 toddlers died of drowning in our state. And from 2010 to 2016, another 740 children suffered a near fatal drowning. Drowning and near drowning is a huge cost, not only regarding the loss of a young life and to their families, but it also has a major impact on California's healthcare systems, special education programs, and taxpayers. The initial hospitalization care and cost is $5 million for just one such brain-injured child. As of last December, the California Department of Developmental Services reports that it has 770 clients receiving care due to near-drowning brain damage. Some are institutionalized due to the extent of their brain damage, costing $30,000 a month for care and treatment. Senate Bill 442 aims to save children's lives by updating California's Pool Safety Act to require that new pools, as well as pools being repaired or retrofitted, to now have 2 pool safety barriers installed. Pool owners are provided a choice of 7 types of safety barriers to pick options that work best for their pool location and situation. All of the 7 allowed must meet national safety standards. The list of 7 safety options are isolation fencing with self-closing latching gate, removable mesh fencing with self-closing latching gate, pool cover, door to the pool alarm, self-closing and latching door to the pool with latch 54 inches above the floor in the pool alarm, or other approved technologies. The door to the pool alarm under the new law will be allowed to be either a siren shrill noise or a verbal warning alarm, such as door to the pool is open. When a home is sold, the pools must be inspected by a home inspector, and lack of compliance with the Pool Safety Act must be reported in the home sale defect report, along with other safety and structural issues such as earthquake safety. Toddlers age 1 to 4 years old have gained a lot of agility and are naturally drawn to water. Even when a pool is closed or not being used, they may gain access to the pool unless it is blocked, and often to a pool that's not at their own home. The California Coalition for Children's Safety and Health issued stories by parents who lost children to drowning, along with a statement which reads, "The layers of safety protection provided in SB 442 would have made a difference in all of these childhood drowning incidents." The bill was supported by children's safety advocacy groups, insurance companies, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the California Pool and Spa Association. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
the unimaginable destruction of the ongoing Northern California wildfires that have taken homes, schools, and lives has proven devastating to thousands and thousands of families, says Nancy Padilla, one of three East County women who are organizing a caravan of relief supplies to help the fire survivors. Many have been left with nothing, their personal possessions lost to the flames. So this week, the local women are collecting supplies, which they will be transporting by trucks and flatbed trailers to the Sonoma area. Lisa Bond, another of the drivers, says they are leaving from El Cajon this Friday. The effort was the idea of Nicole Walker, a local trucker who also drove an 18-wheeler to Houston to deliver hurricane relief supplies. Items needed include toiletries and personal hygiene products, packaged underwear and socks, though not other clothing, diapers and infant supplies, air mattresses, cleaning supplies, rubber gloves, blankets and towels, over-the-counter medications, walkers, canes, wheelchairs, and other items for the disabled, as well as reading glasses. Items are also sought for older children and teens who are often overlooked after disasters. They need backpacks, school supplies, and sports equipment, as well as cosmetics and other items. In addition, the women are looking for pet supplies such as leashes, cat litter boxes, pet beds, food and water bowls, and hay for farm animals. Donations for fuel costs for the trip are also welcome. If you would like to donate items, you can call Lisa at 619-871-1117. Again, that number is 619-871-1117. Donations can be dropped off at 10487 Quail Canyon Road in El Cajon. Again, that's 10487 Quail Canyon Road in El Cajon, this Monday through Wednesday from noon to 6 p.m. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
One of 68 children born in the U.S. will develop autism spectrum disorder, which can interfere with developing language, reading, educational, and social skills, according to a news release from San Diego State University. Around the world, researchers are discovering and testing new strategies to help improve learning outcomes for children with autism, but vetting and implementing these programs has been a bottleneck. Now, a $1.4 million grant has been awarded to SDSU education professor Jessica Suheinrich by the Institute of Educational Sciences. The three-year grant will be used to study how to improve the implementation and effectiveness of evidence-based education strategies to help students with autism spectrum disorder. She'll be working with colleagues at the UC Davis Medical Investigation of Neurodevelopmental Disorder Institute to examine effectiveness of a statewide resource, the California Autism Professional Training and Information Network, for sharing experiences and ideas. Researchers will also look at policy by schools, school districts, and the state for training teachers and staff. The work complements SDSU's expertise in using neuroimaging to reveal subtle neural signatures of autism in young brains, as well as tracking people with autism throughout their lives and developing therapies. These efforts will be boosted next year with the opening of a functional magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI, lab in January. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
This is Gene Carpenter with a public service announcement from the El Cajon Police Department. Car crashes are the leading cause of death for teenagers in the United States. To shed light on the epidemic and reduce the number of lives lost, the El Cajon Police Department wants to draw public attention to National Teen Driver Safety Week, October 15th through the 21st. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration reports that nationwide in 2015, 1,972 drivers ages 15 through 18 were involved in fatal collisions. In California, that same year, 283 teens were behind the wheel at the time of fatal collisions, and 63% of those young drivers were at fault. Teen Driver Safety Week will help parents focus attention on setting rules for their teen driver before allowing them to get behind the wheel. These rules can be the difference between life and death. Inexperience is one of the leading causes of teen collisions. The most important thing a parent can do for a new teen driver is to stay involved in their driving life. Take frequent drives with your newly licensed teens to monitor their progress. Parents can reduce dangerous and sometimes deadly behaviors such as driving without seatbelts, speeding, driving while intoxicated, carrying extra passengers, and driving distracted. Rhonda Kraft, director of the California Office of Safety, says cell phone use continues to be a serious and often deadly distraction for all drivers, but it's a significant problem among young, inexperienced drivers. She adds, if you're a parent, guardian, or mentor to a teen driver, lead by example and encourage them to put the phone down and focus on the road. No text message or social media post is more valuable than their lives or the lives of others around them. There are programs for teen drivers and their families. For example, Start Smart, conducted by law enforcement personnel, is a driver safety education class that targets new and future licensed drivers between the ages of 15 through 19 and their parents or guardians. The California Highway Patrol has released a mobile app for the Start Smart, designed to assist young people through the process of obtaining their California driver's license. The app includes a step-by-step guide covering everything from the Department of Motor Vehicles Driver Handbook and the final steps for obtaining a provisional license to ultimately achieving an unrestricted California driver license.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Some California groups are predicting that President Donald Trump's new executive order on health care could undermine health insurance markets and lead to higher premiums for many people. The order directs federal agencies to loosen regulations to allow small businesses to band together and offer low-cost plans across state lines that don't meet the minimum coverage standards of the Affordable Care Act. Rachel Lynn Gish with the California nonprofit group Health Access warns these plans will be similar to those outlawed by the ACA as junk insurance that cover very little in the event of a serious injury or illness.
There were a lot of plans out there that, sure, it would be really cheap, but your deductibles would be extremely high, your copays would be high, prescription drug costs almost 100% out of pocket.
The executive order would also make short-term insurance plans more widely available. The president says it will provide a low-cost alternative. Opponents counter that it will mean fewer young, healthy people get their insurance on the state exchanges. Their participation is necessary to stabilize the risk level for insurers and keep premiums down for the majority of people. Gish says the administration, frustrated by its failure to repeal the ACA, is sabotaging it instead by cutting the enrollment period in half, slashing the budget to promote enrollment, and threatening to withhold cost-sharing payments to the states that help people afford their premiums.
He's doing everything in his power to make sure that Obamacare collapses. The president says that Obamacare is collapsing, but in fact, he is the one doing the collapsing by doing executive orders like this.
On Tuesday, Covered California, the ACA exchange in the Golden State, announced it's adding a 15% surcharge on silver-level health plans to compensate for the anticipated loss of the cost-sharing reduction payments. People affected by the increase, however, are expected to be eligible for extra subsidies to offset the higher premiums. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
Sixty-year-old Jack Waddell was arrested on Saturday after the Alpine Sheriff's Department received calls that the suspect was threatening to shoot people in a crowded library and was pointing a toy gun at people, according to Sergeant Alex Navarro with the Sheriff's Department. Another caller reported hearing shots fired at the Alpine Library. The shots are believed to have been from an air gun. The suspect also threatened to grab a second handgun from inside his backpack, so a citizen grabbed the suspect to try and protect those present, witnesses said. The citizen sustained a small cut near his eye in the scuffle but declined treatment. The suspect fled, and deputies set up a perimeter. They were searching the area when a witness at Mañana's Mexican restaurant told deputies the suspect was behind the restaurant, where he was found hiding under boxes and arrested. Waddell was found to be in possession of two black imitation handguns. He was arrested for assault with a deadly weapon, however, as well as criminal threats, display of a firearm, and battery. He's been booked into the San Diego County Central Jail.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Valerie Watts with East County Magazine's People Power Report. The Grossmont Healthcare District has approved a $50,000 grant to support the Challenge Center, a nonprofit facility in La Mesa where people with disabilities receive long-term physical therapy rehabilitation and fitness services, regardless of their ability to pay. The grant aims to fund services for up to 170 people and pay for purchase and maintenance of specialized equipment. According to Tiffany Picayu, Challenge Center's executive director, a recent study showed Challenge Center's clients experience a lower rate of hospital readmissions and functional decline, factors which typically can result in higher Medicare costs associated with loss of independence. Picayu thanked Grossmont Healthcare District for its support through the years, adding, "Every dollar invested in the Challenge Center produces bottom-line results in terms of higher-functioning, healthier clients and caregivers, plus healthcare cost savings." She says that without continued therapy, improvement in such severely disabled individuals is unlikely, and depression, declining health, and related secondary conditions are likely to return. Fortunately, many of the Challenge Center's clients are able to attain independence and a higher quality of life. Picayu says, "Our vision is to restore health, provide hope, and transform lives." The Challenge Center was founded in 1987 by the late Bill Baudry, a quadriplegic who suffered a spinal cord injury as a young man. Baudry died in June of this year at age 72. Originally in El Cajon, the center later moved to La Mesa, where it has been supported by funds from the City of La Mesa, private donations, and Grossmont Healthcare District, a public agency serving East County. Its therapeutic physical therapy programs help over 500 clients with mobility disorders, ranging from severe brain and spinal cord injury to multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's disease. Services include assisted fitness training, aerobics, group exercise, and adaptive yoga. One of the fitness machines includes a stationary bicycle with computer-generated electrical stimulation that causes paralyzed lower extremities to pedal, achieving cardiovascular fitness and muscle strengthening. Services are provided on a sliding scale, enabling underinsured individuals to receive the care they need.
Carfentanil, an elephant tranquilizer drug that is 5,000 times stronger than heroin, is turning up in street drugs marketed as opioid narcotic painkillers such as oxycodone, as well as disguised as heroin with lethal results. The drug is so deadly that just a couple of granules the size of salt crystals will cause death, even with medical intervention. It's turning up in street drugs locally and nationally, including drugs sold by dealers and on the Internet's dark web, and deaths are skyrocketing as a result. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports that agents in San Diego and Imperial counties have seized over 20,000 counterfeit oxycodone pills. Besides carfentanil, counterfeit drugs locally have also been found laced with fentanyl, methamphetamine, cocaine, and other drugs and chemicals. One San Diego drug trafficker was found with a small baggie containing enough carfentanil to kill 86,000 people, a postal inspector told the Union Tribune. The Centers for Disease Control and the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency have each recently issued warnings about the trend, which DEA Acting Administrator Chuck Rosenberg calls crazy dangerous. Drug overdose is now the leading cause of death for Americans under age 50, causing between 58,000 and 65,000 deaths last year, CBS Live reports. According to the CDC, the death rate from synthetic opioids other than methadone rose more than 72% between 2014 and 2015, and most of those deaths were not from prescription drugs, but rather illegally manufactured fentanyl. Fentanyl is 50 times more potent than heroin and 100 times more potent than morphine. It's what killed the rock star Prince. Now, carfentanil, 100 times stronger even than fentanyl, is being used by illegal drug makers because it's far cheaper than heroin or other opioids, boosting their profits, but at a deadly cost. Carfentanil gas was used by Russian special forces to subdue Chechen rebels holding hostages in a Moscow theater a few years ago, killing 120 hostages from the poison gas as well as subduing rebels. Carfentanil has been banned as a battlefield weapon because it is so lethal it would kill anyone who touched it without special handling and leave behind a toxic landscape, CBS Live 5 news station has reported. Some authorities fear the consequences if terrorists ever utilize carfentanil as a weapon of mass destruction. Most carfentanil is made in China, where new regulations will kick in the near future that authorities hope may stem the tide. But raw materials for making fentanyl and carfentanil have also been shipped to Mexico, where they are converted into the deadly drugs in makeshift labs and then smuggled into the United States. In San Diego County, while some shipments have been confiscated at the border, others have made it into drugs sold on streets. San Diego County's medical examiner has confirmed 40 deaths this year alone from fentanyl and 11 more awaiting confirmation, plus 2 deaths from carfentanil. The trend toward phony but lethal opioid pills and heroin laced with stronger substances is particularly dangerous, given that medical providers have been urged to cut down on prescribing opioids, driving some patients onto the black market, and in a growing number of cases, into the morgue. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today we are back with Chida Warren Darby, who is one of the youngest black co-publishers in the United States. She is the co-publisher and the managing editor of San Diego Voice and Viewpoint, an African-American-based publication that is located in the college area. Chida, thanks for coming back on the show.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here.
Tell our listeners how Voice and Viewpoint got started.
So the San Diego Voice and Viewpoint, we're actually in our 57th year of publishing. We are San Diego's oldest and largest African-American newspaper, serving San Diego County. We are actually the newspaper's third or fourth owners. My family purchased a newspaper in 1987.
So it really has its roots in the civil rights era.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And so we've just been fortunate enough to keep the legacy of the publication alive. And just like with other black newspapers in other cities, it was started to give a voice to an underserved population by publishing news that was relevant to the African-American community without being tainted or skewed any particular way, but just giving the facts of the issues we were dealing with straightforward.
Very good. You have told us that there are some misperceptions out there in the general public about the African-American community, specifically in San Diego County. Mm-hmm. Tell us what those are.
Well, a large misperception is that the black community is in Southeast San Diego. That is not accurate. At one point, it was predominantly black, but today, that community is actually about 40% Latino. And so African Americans can be found all over San Diego County as active residents of the city. So while we are a small population, we are everywhere.
Yeah. Right. I know that Lemon Grove has a large African American community, mm-hmm. and I think 10% of El Cajon now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Correct. Yes.
Very interesting. Even the term African American is getting hard to define because, mm-hmm. as you've noted, many of the people here that visually one might describe as black didn't come from Africa.
Right.
They've come from the Caribbean or they've come from somewhere else.
Yeah, Yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing to observe. And even dealing with our refugee population, you have refugees from Africa that, even though they are now in America, don't necessarily consider themselves African Americans. And so they heavily still identify with their African roots, which, you know, rightfully so. And yeah. So there's always been this thing on how to classify.
Right. So they weren't descendants of slaves. They have a very different cultural background and history.
Right.
And some of them have come from other difficult situations.
Yes. Fleeing war-torn countries. And then you have the whole generational divide from the refugees that come here. So they have children, and those children are more Americanized. And so the children might refer to themselves as African-American, where the parents might still call themselves African. So I personally use the words Black and African-American interchangeably. But definitely, if I'm in a conversation with someone of African descent, it's always safe to ask, you know, what the preference is and how someone wants to be referenced and respecting that. Just as you said, someone might be from the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. They're not African-American.
You might say they're Haitian or they're,
something
else. So how have you put your particular stamp as publisher and managing editor on there? Are there certain issues that were near and dear to your heart that when you took the reins, so to speak, that you've made your own?
You know, we're, as I mentioned earlier, we're careful to report news from an African American perspective. And so with that mindset, we are basically saying that we are encountering the same issues. Not all, but we are encountering some of the same issues that other residents and people are encountering. And so we're giving our response, our feedback through that particular lens of a person of color, of a Black person. And the issues could be vast. On one issue, we might be sharing the same thoughts and feelings as a Latino person, but clearly we're from different ethnic backgrounds. But on another issue, it might just be a Black issue, you know. So there are a lot of things happening in the city. Of course, one of the big issues is police brutality. We've just passed the 1-year anniversary of the Alfred Alongo shooting.
Yes, which was right here in El Cajon.
Yes, yes.
And now, so, I understand you just attended a rally for the anniversary of that shooting.
You know, they did have a rally, and, you know, they're still looking to get some justice from the situation. And I think the whole thought process is, people don't want to feel like that the whole incident was just dismissed, that there was a life taken, and that there needs to be better methods that are taken in apprehending a person, or even just figuring out the root of the problem, but that killing someone can't be the answer.
Yeah. What about more oversight of the police?
Absolutely. There definitely needs to be more oversight, more transparency, accountability. If something does occur, that people aren't left feeling as if the police have just gotten away with something.
Right. Know? I mean, unfortunately, incidents can and do happen in every police department, probably every field.
Yes.
But it's how you treat that, and do you weed out problems? Do you try to learn from it? Do you try to figure out how do we prevent this from happening again? Do maybe better training?
And cultural sensitivity, you know, Alfred Alongo was an African man.
That's right.
Yeah. And so he actually was a refugee here in San Diego. And so you still have cultural differences. While he was raised here, he spent most of his life here.
Mental health issues involved with him.
There were said to have been some mental health issues. And what came out later was that he had just lost a dear friend to suicide.
Yeah.
And so while it might not have per se been ongoing, he definitely was reacting to some personal trauma that had just taken place in his life. And so, of course, he never got to really speak about that. He literally, from what I understand, if I remember the story correctly, it was probably within minutes of hearing that his friend had just died.
I understand that one positive that did come out of it is that the Attorney General, Kamala Harris, who now, of course, is our California senator, but at the time she was an African-American woman who was the Attorney General, and that she came up with a database. So now police have to report use of force incidences, and at least the citizens can sort of find out if your police force is better or worse than average on these things.
Right. Kamala has been very proactive in implementing a lot of methods and measures where citizens can kind of be in partnership with people in authority so that they have some accountability.
Yeah.
So I definitely applaud her for opening that door and giving us access to information to to help us with our selection processes and our responses to things that happen like this, because it's important.
Now, you've mentioned to me that one important issue right now for the African-American community in San Diego is the choice of a new San Diego police chief. Shelley Zimmerman has announced she's retiring.
Yes.
What kind of input are people of color in the community having into that process, or do you feel that the voices are being excluded?
I think it's a catch-22. I feel like on some levels, I feel like the city is playing it safe in terms of, to some degree, making people feel like they're included in the process. I think while there have been some efforts to make people feel included, I think, a lot of the citizens of color are asking for more. Mm-hmm. They want to be included at a greater level. And so they don't want to be informed of any secret panels or secret selection processes. And I think overall, people want to feel like the individual placed in that position, as chief of police reflects the mindset and the thoughts of the people that they are in charge of protecting.
Yeah, very good points. Yeah. San Diego and California seem to have a history of breaking down barriers. We've certainly had a long tradition of electing many women to higher office. Mm-hmm. We've had two women senators for a long time. Lots of women in the state legislature.
Right.
Bonnie DeMonis, the current DA, is a woman.
Mm-hmm.
We have women of color also, with Kamala Harris, as we mentioned, as attorney general, and Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, Dr. Mm-hmm. Shirley Weber, mm-hmm. very strong woman's voice. Now we have an African-American woman, Genevieve Jones, who's running for district attorney.
Yeah.
How big a difference do you think that it could make in the criminal justice system in our region if she were to be elected?
Well, I think it could make a huge difference. Genevieve comes from obviously a different background than our current DA, Summer Steffens. And so she is an African-American woman. She grew up in the southeastern part of San Diego, and that makes her experience different. And so I think, like with anything, you bring your background and your perspective to the table. And with her being a Black woman, I feel like she could bring some insight to particular situations that might require more sensitivity mm-hmm. to African-American people that maybe another person wouldn't have deemed important.
She has said that she was a victim of racial profiling
yes.
by San Diego police
yes.
herself.
Yes.
Tell us that story for those that may not know it.
Well, at one point, I believe it's probably been about a year, almost a year ago, if not more, she was on her way home in the southeastern area and was pulled over by the San Diego police department. And so she did record the incident, but was just kind of profiled the entire time unnecessarily. Of course, they didn't
handcuffed
know.
And everything.
I believe she was. And at the time, they didn't know who she was or ask the appropriate questions. But the fact that she's had that experience as a Black woman that can now be in a position yeah. to be on the other side.
Yeah, she'd done nothing wrong.
Right.
It was just,
right. Just a routine stop. And it was something, could have been something as minor as your brake light or something, your tail light is out. I can't remember what the cause of the stop was.
I think they thought that maybe the vehicle might have matched a description of one used.
Yes, that could have been it. Right. So she was just, you know, visibly shaken up by that incident. And I think that incident, along with other things she's encountered.
Yeah. I understand. I mean, she was dressed in a suit. Mm-hmm. She was an attorney. She mm-hmm. was on her way back from a legal
right.
function.
She was on her way home.
Didn't exactly fit the profile of, you know,
not
street thug.
Right.
Yet.
Right.
So there was that question of, was it because of the color of her skin
right.
that she was treated that way?
Or the vehicle she was driving, you know, what was the real premise?
Yeah, if she'd been white, would it have been handled
right.
differently?
Right. Right. So, like I said, those experiences, you know, you take the lemons and make lemonade, and hopefully, you know, this negative experience has just added to the great representation that mm-hmm. she can offer from having that.
At the national level, mm-hmm. we've seen so much in the headlines recently, and a great, I think, rise in concern among many people about this perception that white supremacism is rearing its head once again when we see KKK members and Nazis marching in a mm-hmm. rally, and that horrible incident where a vehicle driven by one of them
right.
drove into a crowd and killed someone.
Yeah.
And then we had the President of the United States, Donald Trump, saying there were good people on both sides.
Right, right.
How did that impact people here in the African-American community in San Diego? And I should say that coupled with a pattern of other things we've seen this administration doing, such as weakening the Voting Rights Act and looking to take away affirmative action. Is there a sense that those hard-fought rights that people may have thought, you know, the victory was over?
I don't think, as an African-American, I don't think you can ever let your guard down, unfortunately, in this country. You might get a break, but I don't ever feel like your guard is completely let down. And so while these occurrences may be new to some people, it's just, it's cyclical. It rears up in some way, shape, or form very often, more often than we like to admit. Yeah. But, I definitely think, African Americans locally are experiencing and expressing the same things that, we are nationally. And what I'm finding is the same concern that we have is also trickling into other ethnic groups. And that the thing that I really appreciate seeing is that there's more vocal and visual support from other people.
Well, certainly, yeah. The African Americans aren't the only one that have been targeted in this way. Right. We're seeing him looking to mass deport Hispanic immigrants, undocumented immigrants, blocking refugees, which includes people from Iraq and the Middle East, women, erosion of women's rights too.
Right.
So I think you're right. I think there's a little bit more of a solidarity. You can't just sort of wait until it's me being affected. It's everyone.
Well, and I think we've hit more of a melting pot time period. While we're still very segregated in some ways, you have a lot of people, you know, that aren't checking the box on the application that says white, black, or Latino. A lot of people are checking that other box.
Or multiracial.
You know, we're mixed with so many different things, and we have relationships with people of a lot of different ethnicities. And so those things are starting to hit home because these issues. So the great thing about all these issues arising is that people have relationships with folks of different ethnicities, and now their relationships are being impacted. And so because these issues are hitting so close to home and are affecting loved ones and friends of different ethnic groups, people are starting to stand in solidarity more so now than before because, you know, they're just realizing and understanding even more so it's just not right.
Yeah.
It's not
right. So there's something empowering to take away from all this, isn't there, about people of all walks of life coming together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And standing up. There are some other issues that are more specific to our region, California, and especially San Diego, not so much a reflection of the national scene, such as the affordable housing crisis. What can you tell us about that?
It's horrible. It is horrible. I mean, I hope that we can wake up as a city and even as a state. This is in a lot of parts is an expensive state to live in, but my fear is that the lack of affordable housing will cause some really great individuals to have to relocate. Some people that could be considered jewels in this town that could really contribute greatly to our overall community would be forced to leave because they simply can't afford to live here.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping there is a shift soon that people will rise up collectively to speak out against it. And then that we can fix it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Are there any other issues that you would like to talk about today that we haven't already brought up?
Oh, goodness. There's always something going on. You know, it's just there's news out there about everything. I just hope that we're walking away from what we hear in the media and see that we're walking away really thinking about each other as human beings.
Yeah, first. That's so important.
Yeah.
What would you say to the folks out there that have taken offense at the Black Lives Matter? Mm-hmm. There's a sort of subset of America out there today that's become very vocal.
Yeah.
Sort of some are true white supremacists, what we might say, and others, I think, are white folks, mostly men, that maybe are also lower income and just feeling left behind. These guys that lost their factory jobs and somehow they blame other people for those problems. But what would you say to the folks who say, well, you know, I don't want to hear about Black Lives Matter.
Right.
All lives matter.
Right.
What would your response be to those folks?
My first comment would say to question why it bothers you so much. What is at the core of, what is the irritant? What is the real irritant there?
Yeah.
And to go back and look at our history as a country and what's happened to Blacks, even from slavery, and even ask, when is it a good time for Blacks to start speaking out and saying we're here? you know, we want to be treated equally. And as I shared with you before, I'm pro-Black, but I'm not anti-white. I'm not anti another person. That just means that this is an opportunity and a time for me to speak up for myself and for my people and to say we're here. We want to be treated fairly. We want to be treated equally. We've contributed to this country in a great way. We're a large part of the foundations laid here.
Absolutely.
And that there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing with saying I'm here and I'm a person.
Yeah. It seems to be such a shame that there are people out there who, when they're down on their luck, would rather kick somebody else and prevent them from climbing up that ladder of success instead of joining hands and saying, let's pull each other up and pull everyone else up.
Right, right. Because a lot of us are dealing with some of the same issues. I mean, we all bleed red blood, you know.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we just experienced this horrific tragedy in Las Vegas. And you know, so many people died and were injured, but it's a people issue. You know, it's a people issue.
It is a people issue.
Yeah.
How does someone, you know, become that way? He did not fit the pattern in any way, shape, or form.
Right. And then the response to the incident, which continues to perpetuate the racial tension, you know, in a lot of ways, it is a terrorist attack. You know, when you kill that many people. So now that there is a white man.
If he'd been a Black Muslim, we would have been hearing all about terrorism.
Automatically terrorism. But he's being classified as a lone wolf or, you know, this guy. And it's not fair. And so.
Yeah, much like Timothy McVeigh in Oklahoma City.
Right, right.
You know, you're right. White militia members.
Right.
The guy in Vegas wasn't a militia member, but still, you're right. If they're white.
Right.
The media and the law enforcement seems to handle it in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. And they play a part in fueling that negative energy because people are now reading this, they're hearing this, and it adds fuel to the fire.
Yeah. So you would say any act where someone goes in and commits a mass shooting is terror. Whether you were acting alone or whether you were part of an organization, it's still terror.
It's terror. You took lives unnecessarily and people are hurt by that. All of us are impacted. And so, you know, it's just remembering that we're human and we all have differences. Every ethnic group, we've encountered some very horrible things, you know, that we're not proud of, but we have to learn how to move past that. And we're all here, all mixed up together. We need to figure out how to get it right and work together and live together.
The Vegas shooting certainly is, reviving the issue of gun control and whether or not, you know, do we really need to have someone be able to go and buy a device that allows you to adjust a semi-automatic weapon and make it almost the equivalent of an automatic weapon, basically a weapon of mass murder. Is that really something that society needs or should more be done? And I certainly gun violence seems to be a big issue in the African American community as well. Mm-hmm. The impacts of it certainly in some of these poor communities.
Mm-hmm. Well, the bigger question is, you know, considering the cost of a gun and how did they get there? And so, you know, we can go back historically and look at things like the CIA and the cocaine epidemic and how some things were actually fueled into Black communities and then kind of left there and all of a sudden we're killing each other. And so there is that question of that. How do we address it? And then too, you know, people feeling like they need to protect themselves. I get both ends of it because, you know, in a lot of cases, a bullet is forever. What is the best method in protecting yourself and in not getting in a situation where it's too late to change the dynamics of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and safety and crime is certainly a big issue with everyone, I think, but certainly in communities of color and in poorer neighborhoods where crime is rampant, where the gangs are taking some of the young men, well, that's an important issue as well.
It is. It definitely is. And it depends on what part of the country you're in. Not all gangs are violent gangs. There's history into why gangs are created in some communities and what their purposes are. In some instances, you have situations where gangs are actually coming together to rebuild their communities.
Interesting.
And so, you know, there's always a larger story. A lot of times it can be this blanket assumption that, you know, that all this stuff is occurring on a negative end. And sometimes it's just not not the case.
Yeah, reminds me of the Hell's Angels that have the reputation of being these big tough guys, and you see them do their teddy bear rides for children. So there's two sides to every
There's
story.
Definitely, and looking at what a gang might represent to a child that might be stemming from a parentless home, you know.
Imagine it's a sense of belonging, someone that becomes sort of like a family to them in some ways.
And not that I advocate it, but I always, you know, just as a journalist, like to go deeper than what's on the surface to see the root of it. And if they're going to participate, what need is being met, you know, and is violent activity necessary for what they're trying to accomplish?
Right. I mean, it's a lot like, why do people become radicalized? Why do they become, you know, Islamic terrorists in some of these parts of the world? And very often it stems from poverty. It stems from hopelessness, lack of a future, a disjointed family situation of some sort.
And what can we do as a society collectively to add that value to people where they don't have to turn to maybe these last resort situations that are detrimental?
Right.
You know, what need are we not offering that they're trying to fill?
It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, Miriam.
We are out of time for today, but we certainly want to have you back on the show, Chida.
Absolutely.
And talk about some of these issues some more. So
yes.
You know where we are.
Yeah.
Get in touch next time there's an important issue in San Diego from the African-American point of view that you would like to talk about.
Thank you, Miriam.
Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Chida Warren Darby, who is the managing editor and co-publisher of San Diego Voice and Viewpoint, San Diego's 57-year-old African-American newspaper. And Chida, where can people find Voice and Viewpoint if they're not already familiar with it?
They can visit our website at www.sdvoice.info, and we have a listing of our outlets located there. So our newspaper is available by subscription, or depending on what part of town they're in, they can stop at their neighborhood corner store, 7-Eleven, and pick up the paper there.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Chida, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
CAL FIRE has opened a criminal investigation into the Wilson Fire, which has scorched 25 acres in the Ranchita area between Warner Springs and the Anza Borrego Desert State Park. According to CAL FIRE, gunfire caused the blaze, which started Sunday. As of Monday, forward spread has been stopped and the brush fire is at least 40% contained. A second fire over the weekend occurred near Green Valley Falls in the Cuyamaca Rancho State Park, where a witness reported seeing a couple light a flare to take photos in a dry meadow moments before the fire began. The Green Fire burned about 8 to 10 acres before it was extinguished. So please, listeners, be careful out there during this hot, dry, windy weather. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk to you now about why we call fall our planting season in Southern California. Obviously, we don't want to plant in August and September when it is so hot and so miserable. So what would we want to plant now and why? Well, for now, even though the rains may not have started, and I'm talking about October, November, December, the nights are cooler, the days are cooler, we don't have those August heat waves of 100 degrees, and once the Santa Anas are through, it's a great time to get things in the ground. What's the best thing to plant now? Now is the time to put in your trees, your native plants, your fall flowers that you pick up at the local nursery, and not to plant tropicals. We don't put in any tropicals now. By tropicals, I mean all the plants you think of when you think of Hawaii, everything you think of when you think of house plants that can grow outdoors. These are all tropical plants that are subject to being frosted. They don't like cold winter weather, so don't put them in the ground now. If you are in a very frost-prone area, then what you don't want to do is plant your citrus, your avocados,
and anything tender right now. Think about where the plants originated. You don't have to look up every single plant that you want to grow, but if something is called Japanese something or other, that means that it will get by with cold weather, and you don't have to worry about planting it now. If it's something that's called Hawaiian something, I would be very leery of planting it in the fall because it's probably highly subject to freezes and frosts. Why would you want to plant natives now, and why would you want to put in shrubs and landscape plants now? The plants that you put in now will not show much visible growth during the winter time, but underground, all sorts of exciting things will be happening. The roots will be growing. The plants will be sitting there waiting to get started in the spring when it first gets to be hot weather. They'll take off like gangbusters. Maybe you went to the Water Conservation Garden and you saw the Chinese pistache trees. If you haven't been there to see them, I recommend you go. In the fall, they turn the most glorious color of red and orange. It's hard to describe how beautiful they are. This is also the time of year when you see the liquid ambers showing off, the sweet gum trees. They look great right now. How do you know you're going to buy one that looks wonderful for you? Now's the time. Go to the nursery now and look at the tree colors of the ones that you like and pick ones that change the colors that you like. There will be some variation in your yard because possibly your yard doesn't get as cold or isn't quite as wet or has a different kind of soil than the nursery has, but it's the best way to get the tree that you want for some gorgeous fall foliage. Why am I not telling you to plant your fruit trees now? Because you can save so much money if you wait until January. That's when the nurseries and the big box stores bring in the bare root plants. And when we get closer to that season, we'll have another session on here, and I'll give you all the instructions to have a great start on trees that will cost you $13 if you buy them in December or January, but they'll cost you $35 or $40 if you buy them in May.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine and KNSJ with some important safety tips. On average, 20,000 deaths and 21 million medical visits occur annually, Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna reminds us. Firefighters and paramedics respond to thousands of accidents every day, he says. Chief DiGiovanna, author of the Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine, offers these tips to help prevent accidents in your home. In the bathroom, cleaners should be locked away, out of the reach of children. Medications, scissors, razor blades, and cleaning supplies should be kept in a locked cabinet or out of the reach of children and pets. Non-skid stickers in the tub and shower can prevent slips and falls. Children should not be left unattended in or around the pool. Pool areas should be fenced in with a gate secured with a child-proof safety lock or latch. Electrical safety. Children can stick objects in open sockets and get hurt. Unused electrical outlets must have safety plugs to prevent accidental electrocution from foreign objects being put in the socket. Every home should have a fire extinguisher. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors should be on each floor of the home and tested monthly. Batteries should be changed at least every 6 months or as necessary. A working fire extinguisher must be accessible. Keep paper towels, plastic plates, plastic utensils, and anything other than cooking equipment away from the stove. These items can easily start a fire if left too close to the range. Keep pesticides and cleaners away from children. Store chemicals in a locked cabinet or keep on a high shelf that children cannot reach. Do not spray bug spray or pesticides near a child's toys, since toys tend to go into a child's mouth. In addition, never leave household chemicals unattended. Unfortunately, small children may try to open the products and drink the contents.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble,
Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin MacLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.